Okay, thanks. The title of my presentation is Within Boll Yield Components of High-Yielding Cotton Cultivars. And I'm now with Texas Tech University and Texas AgriLife Research. I conducted this research when I was with the University of Georgia. And I just would like to point out that two of the staff members that helped me with this research are actually in this room today. I'm not going to make you guys stand up. But anyway, this is some of the stuff that you guys helped me with. And do appreciate it very much. And this is the last University of Georgia paper I've got, so it's time for me to hopefully by this time next year I'll have something from my new place. But anyway, the relationships among cotton lint yields and its components are complex. Worley and his colleagues in the mid-70s concluded that boll number per unit land area was the largest contributor to lint yield, followed by seed number per boll and lint mass per seed. Culp and Harrell in the mid-70s reported increased lint yield was possible under selection for medium to small bolls with the greatest number of small seed per boll while maintaining a high lint percentage. The idea here is that we're trying to produce more seed surface area per unit land area. So if we have more seed per boll and maintain the number of bolls per unit land area, then we'll get more seed surface area. And since fibers are born on the surface or the seed coat, then at least by definition, if we have more seed surface area, then we have more yield potential. Bridge and his colleagues in the early 70s discovered a general change to smaller bowls, smaller seed, and higher lint percentage in successful Delta cultivars. And Miller and Rawlings also found as yield increased by selection, lint percentage and seed per boll increased while boll and seed sizes decreased. So basically, these findings illustrate that within boll yield components have changed as a result of selection for increased lint yield. And our question was with this study is how are within boll yield components related and more contemporary cotton cultivars that are high yielding? So our objective was to determine how yield components in these contemporary cotton cultivars are related. Again, we conducted this study at the University of Georgia Coastal Plain Experiment Station in 2001, 2002, and 2003. This is a list of the varieties or the cultivars that were used in this study. These cultivars at the time were either some of the most popular cultivars in the state of Georgia, or at least in South Georgia, or were thought to be some up-and-coming good varieties for South Georgia. So with these varieties were all selected based on their yield potential. And also we tried, although that's one thing you're never going to know, but we tried to select varieties that we felt like were not very similar genetically, although we really don't know if that's the case. We overseeded and thinned these plants back to 9 plants per meter square. That's basically 3 plants per foot a row on 36-inch rows. At maturity, 6 meters of one row were harvested by fruiting position. Seed cotton from each position was ginned separately. Boll number, lint mass, seed number, seed mass, and seed surface area were determined for each fruiting position. Seed surface area was determined after acid delining, and that's a method from Hodson. It's an old publication, but it was a University of Arkansas publication where it's an alcohol displacement determination. And the tray, you remember all of the alcohol you pipetted? Well, here's some of the results of it. And also these guys did all the delining as well. Fiber fineness and mean fiber length data were determined by APHIS, and we sent these samples to Cotton Incorporated. And those data were used to determine fibers per seed, or fibers per square centimeter of seed surface area. And I'm going to present the mean of the sum of all fruiting positions in this data set. This slide shows you the lint yield data across all the environments. And again, we selected these varieties based on the fact that they were supposed to be good high-yielding varieties or potentially good high-yielding varieties for the Southeast. And you can see in here that some of these varieties were underperforming. So what we eventually decided to do was focus on yield components and the top three yielders in this study, the ones that were consistently the top three yielders, and basically disregard the yield component data from the rest of the nine varieties, the other six. It would be informative to look at yield components and varieties that are really underperforming, but really From our observations, yield components are secondary. The variety is just agronomically not well adapted to the region for some reason, and it just didn't yield well. So yield components in these, if a variety is underperforming, are really secondary. It's just that the variety is not adapted to the environment, and it's an agronomic issue. So we elected to focus on the yield components of the top three yielders, which were Delta Pine 33B. You know, that was a very common variety in South Georgia at that time. It's not surprising that it was one of the top yielders. Delta Pine 491 was an up-and-coming variety at that time. And Stonewall 4892 was also fairly new at that time as well. All of my tables are going to be set up fairly similar. On the left column, we'll have cultivar, and then the next three columns will be the actual data from 2001, 2002, and 2003. This slide illustrates bowl number per meter squared of land area, and Delta Pine 33B, as you can see, in all 3 years had the highest number of bowls per unit of land area, and that was generally followed by Stonewall 4892 and then Delta Pine 491. This slide illustrates lint mass or grams of lint per bowl in each of these cultivars, and again, you can see in all 3 years, Delta Pine 33B had the smallest bowl size relative to the other two varieties, and generally speaking, Stonewall 4892 had the next larger bowls, and then followed by Delta Pine 491. So you can already see, at least yield components are changing here. We've got varieties that have more bowls, but then again, they have smaller bowl sizes, and so you can already see that there's a lot of different ways we can get to lint yield just based on these two components. If we looked at the number of seeds per bowl, we really didn't see anything that we could hang our hat on that was consistent from 1 year to the next. We did see some statistical differences in two of the years. One year, 4892, we were able to record that had the lowest number of seed per bowl, and it was the same in 2003, but 2002 we didn't see that. But anyway, we did see some differences in seeds per bowl. Whether or not that's real or significant, it's a question, in my opinion. Seed mass, however, was highly significant every year. Delta Pine 33B had the lowest seed size of the three varieties, and that was followed by Delta Pine 491, and then, of course, the largest seed variety was Stonewall 4892. And these are harvested seed weights. These are not weights from the actual planted seed. And I think if you're in the seed business, you can see some of these seed sizes are kind of small. Maybe that has something to do with the fact that, or the reason why we don't produce seed in South Georgia. But anyway, to summarize these first few slides, increased bowl number per unit land area with more seeds per bowl and smaller seed and bowl sizes were suggested as desirable selection criteria more than 30 years ago. And of these, Delta Pine 33 more closely matched these criteria than any of the varieties or cultivars in this investigation. Harold and Culp in the mid-70s indicated the rationale for the increased number of small seeds per bowl was increased seed surface area within the bowl for fiber development. And again, we didn't see anything that we could, in my opinion, that we could hang our hats on in terms of bowl or seed numbers per bowl. But we did find some major differences in the number of seeds produced per unit land area. Remember, 33B, it produced smaller bowls, but they were more abundant, and if you had the same number of bowls, seed per bowl, then you do the simple math, and you are to come up with more seeds per unit land area, which is what we found. 33B in all 3 years of the study had the most seeds per unit land area, followed by the other two varieties, 491 and Stonewall 4892. We also were able to calculate total seed surface area. This is where Trey comes in here with off his pipetting, but again, this was an alcohol displacement technique, and this is meter squared of seed surface area per meter squared of land area. 33B is a smaller seed variety. It produces more seeds per unit land area. It's kind of like what we've all learned in basic soils. If you have a cubic centimeter of sand versus a cubic centimeter of clay, which one of those has the more surface area? It'll be the clay. So we have a smaller seed variety, less seed surface area per seed, but more seeds, and therefore we had more seed surface area per unit land area in this study. And again, these are cubic meters of seed per seed surface area per cubic meter of land area. And 33B, again, in all three of the years, was greater than the other two varieties. We can see some year effects there, obviously. But anyway, I always tell people when I present this data that this, you know, some of that trivia that you can talk to your family about around the kitchen table tonight. You know, by the way, did you know how many square centimeters of land are generally in, or square centimeters of seed you find in a square centimeter of land? But anyway, I'll go on. This is lint mass per seed, and this is milligrams of lint per seed. Delta Pine 33B, again, smaller seeded, smaller bowls. It produced less fiber per seed all 3 years of the study, and that was followed by generally by 4890 or by 491 and then by 4892. If we look at lint mass per milligrams of lint per square centimeter of seed surface area, we also saw some significant differences, and they were very consistent from 1 year to the next. 33B also had the lowest lint mass per square centimeter of seed surface area. And to me, that's kind of a measure of efficiency, I guess, is the way to call it. I think some people call it, refer to this as lint frequency. You know, this is, you know, how efficient is that seed surface area, or the epidermal cells on that seed, how efficient are they in producing fibers, or fibers that we can harvest? And while 33B did have more seed surface area per unit land area, it did have a lower seed unit. Let's see, I'll get this out. It did have a lower lint weight per unit seed surface area. So again, these other two varieties are, you know, compensating for the fact that they have a little bit less total seed surface area per unit land area. So to summarize, while 491 and 4892 produced less total seed surface area, compensation occurred through greater lint production per seed and per unit seed surface area. I wanted to spend the last couple of slides just focusing on some of this research that's been done in the past and provide maybe a little historical perspective on yield components. Culp and Harrell were geneticists in Florence, South Carolina with USDA. Am I right? In the mid-70s, and they conducted yield component studies using commercial cultivars and PD lines with release dates from 1945 to 1975. So at that time, they had some material in there that was up to 30 years old. So now, you know, it's 30 years past that, so we've got this, you know, this kind of this historical perspective that's roughly, you know, for the last 60 years, how things changed. And in their studies, they reported a lot of what we talked about. Culp and Harrell, in their papers, they reported 30 to 60 years ago, lint percentage and the material that they evaluated ranged from 30 to 39%. And across cultivars and years in our studies, and this is all cultivars in all years, our lint percentage was 40.1%. 30 to 60 years ago, seed size ranged from 120 to 140 milligrams per seed across cultivars and years. Ours was 77.7. Again, that is a little bit skewed in my opinion, because those seed on the right were grown in South Georgia. But I will suggest to you that I've never seen a seed that's 140 milligrams. I think that would be about the size of a peanut. But I may not be quite that big. But anyway, that's a big seed variety, and we don't have those to my knowledge in this country. 30 to 60 years ago, Culp and Harrell reported that the number of seeds per bowl was 36. In our studies across cultivars and years, it was 29. If we look at milligrams of lint per seed, 30 to 60 years ago, Culp and Harrell reported 72 to 90, and we found 68.5 across cultivars and years. If we look at the number of bowls per meter squared, Culp and Harrell 30 to 60 years ago indicated it was 30 to 55 bowls per meter squared. In our studies, we found 72.8 across cultivars and years. So just to kind of go back to some of what we stated earlier, in the early 70s and in the late 60s, Bridge and Miller and Rawlings indicated selection for increased lint yield resulted in cultivars with more seeds per bowl and smaller seed and bowl sizes with more seed surface area within the bowl for fiber development. Modern cultivars, at least the ones in our studies, were characterized by even smaller seed and bowl sizes, but fewer seeds per bowl, not more. And while this may have resulted in less seed surface area within the bowl for fiber development, the additional number of bowls on a land area basis may have resulted in total seed surface area on a land area basis that is even greater today. And, you know, we're always trying to figure out how to increase yield, and it was suggested many years ago that we use lint frequency as a measure or as a selection criteria. Of course, it's a more difficult number to get, But however, across cultivars, densities, environments, if lint mass were increased 2 milligrams per square centimeter of seed surface area, lint yield, which is only 3%, lint yield would increase by approximately 45 kilograms per hectare. And that's it. So,
thank you very much.
Good.